today, take your Bible and turn to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews was written to a group of people who were, basically, they were being beaten down by life. They had experienced a great deal of difficulties, a lot of suffering in their lives. Some had been put in prison. Some had lost homes and property. And some were basically a displaced people. And the question that I imagine that would pound it in their heart would go something like this: if God supposedly loves us so much, why is our life so hard? I know that none of you have ever thought like that. Like, God, if you love me so much, why is my life so hard? And I don't really think there's a good answer to why questions like that. And because there are no good answers to why questions, some were giving up and going back to their old lives as Jews, their lives before they came to Christ. And so here in chapter 11, the writer is telling them and telling us that the power to endure difficulty and disappointment and uncertainty and confusion and chaos, the power to endure unmet expectations and loss, he says, that power comes from faith. Faith is an active power. And he's helping us see what enduring faith looks like, what enduring faith is, and how enduring faith anchors us and grounds us in a rock-solid relationship with God, even when God doesn't do for us what we think he should do. And how he is helping us see what faith is, he's laying out brief snapshots of some of the some of their ancestors of these Jewish Christians, well-known men and women who acted in faith in the crunch times of life. And the writer's goal is to help us see that they live their life based on what God said rather than what they see. That he's teaching us that living by faith in what God promises in the future has always been how God's people live their lives in the present. By the way, I think we have a pretty good example of faith here from someone in our own body or who has left. But most of you, I'm sure, know Mark Moody. He was here for 12 years as our community group pastor. And a couple weeks back, he uprooted his family, and they've moved to Austin. Mark's going to be a campus pastor at Austin Stone Community Church. And I remember Mark calling me up after an elders meeting one night about 10 o'clock and asking if he could come by. And he came and explained to me that he felt that God was calling him to a different ministry and assured me that it had nothing to do with his displeasure with us or anything. He just felt God was moving him to a different ministry that would stretch him and grow him in his development as a leader. And when I heard his story, I could see God's hand in it. I got an email from Mark last week. I wanted to read a bit of it to you. I'll edit and paraphrase in a couple of places. But Mark writes, "The Moody's have landed in Austin. It's been a crazy week of shuttling kids back and forth to new schools, switching living locations, and acclimating to a new city, but we're here. Here's a brief rundown of how things have gone. The drive from Greenville to Austin took about 2 days, and we arrived at Homewood Suites last Saturday around 5:30. We got up on Sunday morning, headed to the west campus of Austin Stone Community Church, where I'll be serving as the campus pastor, and we were warmly received. All in all, it was a fun morning, getting to know some folks and putting some names with faces. After lunch, we picked up lots of school supplies and prepared for the first day of school the following morning. I'll keep this brief, but Monday morning was spent driving two cars between three schools and ended up being around a two-hour block of time for us. Wow, lots of driving and even more paperwork, but it's become increasingly more doable over the past 4 days, and I think we're getting a routine that will work for us. One of our prayers has been for our kids to like the schools that they're in and begin to feel some connections, and that's beginning to happen." And he tells a little bit about how his kids are doing in school. And he says that Monday, Tuesday will be his first day, official day at work. Then he says, "One of the hardest things Janice and I have done in our married life is to make this transition. I have compared it with trying to pull a 12-foot tall tree out of the ground, somehow keeping the roots alive, and then transplanting it effectively to grow in a completely different soil. That's sort of how we felt during the last month or so as we've weathered the ups and downs of our family's emotions, packed up the majority of our house, and headed out into uncharted territory without having a permanent home established. It stretched our faith more than any other season in our marriage, and yet we are trusting that God is leading us and that He is good and that He's always faithful to bring us exactly what He wants at just the right time. I take comfort in Psalm 145. The Lord is near to all who call on Him, to all who call on Him in truth. He fulfills the desires of those who fear Him. He also hears their cry and saves them. He says it's great to know God is near to us. He really does hear us when we call out to Him, and that's what we keep doing. We're calling out to Him. Then he says, leaving Greenville, it was so hard to head west when my heart in that moment wanted to stay put. But God knew that, and He gave us the ability to trust Him and drive west. As you think of us, would you pray first for our children, that they would see how doing hard things as we rest in God and have faith is part of the way God grows His people. It's part of what it means to be Christian. Obviously, not everyone is called to move, but He's always calling all of us to rest in Him and follow Him by faith. Second, pray for a permanent home that will serve our family and the people of our church community well. Part of what will make finding a permanent location more attainable is the sale of our home in Greenville. And he asked, are any of you interested? Grace to all of you. The Moody's miss and love you all. And we look forward to hearing how God continues to work in and through you in Greenville as He begins to connect us here in Austin. So that's hard. It's a hard thing. They're doing a hard thing. I personally know how hard it is to make a move like that because our family has done that four times. Leaving a home, good friends, good church, heading out, not knowing how things are all going to come together, not knowing what the future holds. Facing down your anxiety and your fear, wondering how your kids will make the transition, leaving behind relative certainty for total uncertainty. And I say relative certainty because certainty is an illusion. We're not certain about anything. But this willingness to trust God without knowing how everything is going to work out is essential to biblical faith. Let me put that on the screen. Being willing to trust God without knowing how everything will turn out is essential to biblical faith, because the call to faith is a call to live with risk, to live with uncertainty, with unknowns. The call to live by faith is a call to move outside your comfort zone, a call to live with change, with unexpected twists and turns. It's a hard thing. But that's exactly what Mark and Janice are doing. In fear and trembling, they felt God's call to leave their home with no home as a destination point. They were called to leave longtime friends to go and make new friends. They were called to trust God with finances because the cost of living in Austin is much higher than here in Greenville. They were called to leave comfort for discomfort, at least for a time, security for insecurity, at least for a while, and they stepped out in faith without having all the I's dotted and T's crossed and every blank filled in. That's what faith is. Now, how were they able to do all of that, as scary as it is? Well, he tells us. He says that they're trusting God. They're looking to God's goodness and God's faithfulness. And they're holding on to the promise of God in Psalm 145 that He's near to those who call on Him. That's what a by faith way of life looks like. Now, imagine, if you would, how much harder it would be to have God call you to leave everything behind and go somewhere, but God doesn't tell you where. I mean, what if God just said, leave Greenville and drive west? Well, that's exactly what we're going to look at this morning in Hebrews 11 as we come to the next hero of faith here, Abraham, who was the father of the Jewish nation and the man whose life gives us the clearest picture of enduring faith in the entire Bible. Look at verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Underline that. That's the key phrase, not knowing where he was going. Back in Genesis 12, verse 1, this is how the actual story read when God called Abraham. He said, "Go out from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you." To the land which I will show you. You get that, right? God steps into his day-to-day life. He's living a comfortable life in a prosperous city. And one day he's working at whatever job he happened to be working at. And one day he's worshiping a mute moon god, the god of the of Ur, of the Chaldees. And one day, totally unexpected, the one true and living God breaks into his life and speaks to him and says, "Abram, I've got a plan for you. I want you to leave your home, leave your relatives, and I want you to get in the minivan and drive west." And Abram, I'm quite sure that hearing God's voice shook him to the core, but Abram, while on his face, scared to death, he says, "Okay, where do you want me to go?" And God says, "Let me worry about that. Just go." And so Abraham went out, not knowing where he was going. And it took him years before he knew where he was going. Now let me put it this way. Abraham went out not needing to know where he was going. Abraham went out not needing to know where he was going. I'm not saying that was easy at all. I don't think it was easy. I think it was the hardest thing that Abram and Sarai had ever done in their married life. I'm simply saying to do what he did, he had to get to the point that he didn't need to know where he was going or he would have never gone. Now, not everyone is called to do the same thing, as Mark said. Some people are called to serve in familiar surroundings. Others are called to uproot and leave and travel great distances. Some are called to take new risks in relationships that already exist. And some have to move and make new relationships in new places. Last week, we looked at Noah, and Noah was called to stay in one place. Decade after decade after decade, doing the work of God right in his backyard, telling his friends and his neighbors and everyone he could about the coming flood, the judgment of God. That was a hard thing. That was a hard thing. Faith for Noah was staying put and building an ark, which didn't make any sense, but he built an ark to save his family. And to do that took every bit as much faith as it did for Abraham to leave Ur. But Noah and Abraham had one thing in common, and that is that by faith, both men chose not to let their circumstances and how they felt about their circumstances be the determining factor in how they lived their lives. In other words, they had to make themselves comfortable not knowing everything. Mark it down. Most often, when God tells you what he wants you to do, he doesn't tell you how to do it or how long it will take or where you will ultimately end up. All he does is he simply calls us to follow him, and most often he doesn't tell us where the journey will take us. Most often he doesn't give us a map ahead of time. Think, if Abraham decided to only do what was practical, if he decided to do only the things that he could be certain would turn out for his good, if he decided to only do the things that made sense to him, where would he be? Well, I don't know where he would be, but I guarantee you he wouldn't be in this book. No, to walk by faith meant he had to learn not to trust his circumstances, but to trust God. See, faith asks the question that faith asks is, will I be God-focused or will I be circumstance-focused? And here's the deal. When you base your life on your circumstances, you will constantly struggle with anxiety and instability in your life. If you base your life on your circumstances, you'll constantly struggle with anxiety and instability in your life because you can't control your circumstances, and they change all the time. You see, most of us are always striving and straining to figure out what's going to happen in the future, and we're always hedging our bets. We're afraid to commit unless all the blanks are filled in. We're afraid to do anything unless we know where we're going. In fact, all too often, we won't go unless we know where it'll take us. But Abraham realized it was the going that mattered. Abraham realized it was his response to God that mattered. And that meant that having absolute certainty didn't matter. That meant he had to get comfortable with change. With change. Not knowing where he's going. Now let me push that a bit more. When it comes to living a by faith way of life, if you don't get comfortable with change, you'll never be comfortable with God. When it comes to living a by faith way of life, if you don't get comfortable with change, you'll never be comfortable with God. You'll never be comfortable living by faith. Because a faith life is a life that changes. Hear me. I know change is harder for some of you than others. Some people seem to thrive on change, and for others, they do everything they can to avoid change because change feels like loss, right? I mean, think of how Abraham felt when he left behind his life in Ur. It didn't just feel like loss. It was lost to him. But part of what it means to be Christian is to become more and more comfortable with change. And if you don't get comfortable with change, you'll never be comfortable with God, and you won't be able to live by faith. In October, I will have been your pastor for 17 years. And 17 years is a long time. And over those 17 years, we've made lots of changes, big changes. We changed from a congregational form of government to a biblical form of government. We dropped Baptist out of our name. We separated the church and school, and we launched the school out as its own distinct ministry, and we moved up here. And all those things were hard changes, and for some it felt like loss. That's more to some than others, but these changes, though, I think as we look back in 2020 hindsight, we can see that we really do believe that God was leading, and those changes have been for the better. And we moved up here, and for the first 5 years, we grew on average about 13% a year, and meaning that we were running about 1,000 down there, and we got about 2,000 now. And so over the last 2 years, to accommodate those that growth, we've made quite a few more changes, a lot of changes in the last 2 years. And the most recent, of course, is changing our name from Southside Fellowship to Fellowship Greenville, which will take place officially on November the 3rd, and everything's on track to do that. But again, some of the changes that we've made, especially over the last 2 years, have felt like loss to some of you because change is hard and change feels like loss. But the leadership have sensed God leading in those changes, and we felt them necessary to do this, to do more of what we're doing more effectively to reach and disciple more people. When I'm asked in Discovering Southside, and I'm asked this frequently, Charlie, where do you see Southside in the next 5 years? That's a frequent question that always comes up, and I've answered it the same way for 17 years. I always answer it this way. My prayer is that we will be doing what we are doing right now, just more of it, more effectively, to reach and disciple more people. That we're not going to change our overall direction of ministry and our philosophy of ministry or our vision. Our vision is that we would become a community of grace that lives out the purpose and personality of Jesus in our world. And that our mission is to reintroduce people to Jesus and the life that he offers. That's not going to change. That's just a restatement of the Great Commission. It's not going to change. But if God brings more people here, if God causes us to grow, and if God calls us to take greater steps of faith in the future, then to follow him means we need to be willing to make whatever changes he leads us to make so we can care for and create space for more people. Now, I can hear some of you now, because you're leaning over and you're saying, I wonder what changes he's talking about. I bet he already knows what the changes are. He's just not telling us. No, I don't know what the changes are. The elders don't know what the changes are. There's no conspiracy. The elders don't know what the future changes will be. We're still asking God that question, but it could mean the possibility of adding more services, like a Saturday night service or a Sunday afternoon service. It could mean different service times that might accommodate more people. We're looking and pray about that. It could mean adding another building here on campus. It could mean adding another campus somewhere else or planting another church. But if God keeps bringing people here, I guarantee you we'll be changing. Growth means change. And to our way of thinking, none of the things that I've just mentioned there are directional or philosophical. They're just operational. All those things are simply ways that we can do more of what we're doing more effectively to reach and disciple more people as God gives the increase. And that kind of ministry, by the way, predates me. It's how our previous pastor of 32 years, Walt Hanford, laid the groundwork for what this church is today. And by the way, you need to pray for Walt. He's in the hospital and he's ill. And so don't flood him with or him and Libby with phone calls. Write him a note. Just add him to your prayer list. But we love him, and he's my hero. And let me just say this. Let me remind you of this. The way that the elders and the directional team makes decisions is that we look for where God is working so we can join him there. We look for where God is working so we can join him there. That means no elder comes to the table with a predetermined agenda. We all come to the table asking God, what's your agenda? We all come asking the Spirit of God to show us what he would have us do next. And we pray and we seek and we knock on this door and we knock on that door. And God, over the years, brings us to one mind. And when we come to one mind and we're unanimous, well, then we come to you and present those changes. And that's the way that God has led over the past 17 years is most often he tells us what to do before he tells us how to do it. That's the way faith operates. He'll tell you what he wants you to do, but not necessarily how it's all going to work out. And so you step out not knowing where you're going exactly and trusting that he fills in the blanks along the way. And that's scary, but it's also exciting. I don't want to do ministry where you start at the table with plan your work and work your plan. No, I want to know what God's plan is. All the elders want to know what God's plan is. So when God unveils that, it is scary and exciting because you know what he wants you to do, but didn't tell you how he's going to do it. So that's the way Abraham lived. Abraham went out not knowing where he's going, meaning he had to get comfortable with change and uncertainty. Now, so I'm going to ask you, are you comfortable with change and uncertainty? Are you? Now, you don't have to be, but here's the thing. Are you willing? Are you willing to at least see that the nature of faith calls you to get comfortable with change and uncertainty? Because if you don't understand faith that way, you're twisting faith and you're twisting Christianity into your own image to make it more comfortable. And that'll cause you to live with constant anxiety and instability because your emotional life will be ruled by what you see and feel about the circumstances of your life. Your emotional life will be ruled by what you see rather than what God says, verse 9. Now, I want you to see in the next 8 verses a couple more ingredients of enduring faith that directly relate to this issue of getting more and more comfortable with the changes that God calls you to make or the changes he just plops into your life. Either way, either he calls you to make a change or he just brings change. You got to live by faith. So, verse 9, by faith, Abraham went to live in a land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs of the same promise. Living in tents is the key phrase in this verse. Abraham finally gets to the land that God's promised him back when he left his home in Ur of the Chaldees. But when he gets to the land, God says, I want you to live in tents. I mean, God deeds him the land, tells him the land is his inheritance and his descendants' inheritance. But God says, I want you to live in tents. In other words, he wasn't allowed to settle down and build a home. He was not allowed, and Abraham had a huge entourage of people and servants and everybody traveling, but he was not allowed to settle down and build a walled city to protect everybody like everybody else in the land. He had to live in tents, just as his son Isaac and his grandson Jacob did, who were also heirs of the promise. So what's the point? Well, this is another change. I mean, if God had said to the Moody's, leave your house and friends and your church in Greenville and move to Austin, and I would imagine when Mark heard that call, that he would thoroughly, most definitely think, well, we're going to leave this house and hopefully sell it sometime soon, and God's going to provide us a house in Austin. Of course, that's the way you would think. But what if God came to the Moody's and said, I want you to leave Greenville, leave your church, leave your job, and I want you to get in your Suburban, and I want you just to drive west. And when you get there, no house for you. I just want you to live in tents. Now, Mark, who hiked the Appalachian Trail, he might be okay with that. Janice, I'm not so sure. Kids, not so sure. But you see, that's what God tells Abraham to do. So are you feeling this now? I mean, the patriarchal family, the family God will use to literally change history, they had to live in tents while other people lived in cities. It doesn't make any sense. And hear me, Abraham struggles. He struggles with this. He has ups and downs. He takes things into his own hands. He tries to orchestrate circumstances and outcomes. He doesn't always get it right. But he has to wrestle with change and uncertainty and lack of security and impermanence by depending on God to be his security, by trusting God's future promise to be his ultimate permanence. Now, you are people that live by faith. Do you understand what that means? It means you're living in a tent. We are all Christians are tent dwellers here. And twice the Apostle Peter, when he's writing to persecuted Christians, he calls them strangers and aliens and exiles on the earth. Point being, the authentic Christian life, the by faith way of life, is a life of living in tents. Which means, again, in this life, things are going to change. Things will be uncertain. Things will be impermanent. Nothing stays the same forever. Tent stakes come loose. Tent poles break. The rain pours and the wind beats on the tent and it flaps all over the place. We camp in a season of life for a while. And then something happens that uproots you and your family and God moves you to another place. Or a family member dies and everything is different. A health situation brings big changes. You lose your job. You get a new job someplace else. You raise your kids and they move away. They have lives that are different from what you hoped for them. Elderly parents grow feeble and frail and you have to take care of them. Everything changes. There's nothing permanent here. That's the way it is for people who live in tents. The Christian life is a life of a tent dweller. Faith has to get comfortable with that. You have to get comfortable with that. That's part of change, being light on your feet. This is another ingredient of enduring faith. And if we don't get comfortable with it, we'll always be in conflict with God. Because we'll be trying to put down stakes and roots, and he'll be trying to uproot us by throwing all kinds of things into our life to grow our faith. The truth is, we cannot know where we are going. We don't know what is coming. We can't see what lies ahead in this life. The truth is, everything that we hold dear, everything we hold on to that we think is permanent, if we live long enough, houses, family, money, position, possessions, health, it'll all be taken from us. We don't own anything. In this life, nothing is permanent. You can't take it with you. I love what my mentor, Haddon Robinson, used to say. He said, I've never seen a U-Haul following a hearse to the cemetery. I mean, you can't take it with you. It means it's not permanent. So how do you live a life? How do you live life to the full knowing that God is fond of changes and God is calling you to live as a tent dweller? I mean, man, you're like, oh, this is depressing. If this is the way life is, I think I'll just crawl up in a little ball and suck my thumb. I did that twice this past week. Seriously. I mean, how do you live a life to the full knowing that the life of faith is one change after another? Well, okay, well, hold on to that thought. We'll get to it in a minute. But there's one more thing that we have to get comfortable with when it comes to faith. Look at verse 11. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man and him as good as dead were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. This is an interesting verse because there's some debate about whether this verse is actually about Sarah or if it's about Abraham, because it is possible, and many scholars translate it this way, and I actually think this is the correct way of translating, given the context. This is from the NET Bible. It could be translated like this. By faith, even though Sarah herself was barren and he was too old, he, Abraham, received the ability to procreate because he regarded the one who had given the promise to be trustworthy. And again, personally, I think that's the best way to understand this verse because the entire context is about Abraham. And verse 12 puts the focus on Abraham because it says, therefore, from one man and him as good as dead were born descendants. Now, so Abraham was as good as dead, could not procreate. Sarah, I mean, she's past, she's beyond childbearing age. And here's the deal, though. God told Abraham, when he was still in Ur, at age 75, he said, I'm going to make from you a great nation that will bless all nations. But Abraham and Sarah didn't have any children. And so they waited and waited and waited and waited and waited. And then they took matters into their own hands, which just made things turn out to be a disaster. And when God said, listen, your plan is not my plan. I'm going to give you a son. They waited even longer. They waited 25 years for God to keep his promise. When Abraham was 99 and Sarah was 90, the angel of the Lord came and spoke to them and said that next year Abraham and Sarah would have a son, and Abraham believed that God would keep his word, and the next year Isaac was born. What I want you to see in this part of the story here is that faith waits. Faith brings difficult changes into our tent-dwelling lives, and one of the things that make those changes hard is that sometimes we have to wait while God is working. Now, I think I'm safe in assuming that most of us in this room don't like to wait. I don't like to wait. I hate waiting. I don't like it when I have to stand in line at the grocery store. When I see at Walmart, there are like 50 places to check out. There's only 3 open in the line of like 50 people down, so I don't like that. I don't like being at a stoplight and sitting behind an accelerator-challenged driver who's talking on their cell phone when the light turns green. I don't like it when I pull into a gas station and all the pumps are taken. I don't like waiting for food at a restaurant. Now, I'm making progress because over the years, I've learned to wait patiently in the car for my wife to get ready without blowing the horn. So I am making progress, but waiting is no fun. But all those kinds of waiting, they're just bothersome. I mean, there are much more difficult things God calls us to wait on. And the call to wait is a call to live by faith. A call to live by faith is not going to Austin. It's not just doing something that radical. It's a call many times to wait, like you're single and you're waiting for God to send the right person along. Or you're a childless couple and you desperately want to start a new family, but day after day and week after week and month after month and year after year, there's no child. Or there's the waiting of trying to adopt a child. There's the waiting of the person who longs to have meaningful, significant work that seems to matter, but it's not happening. There's the waiting of a spouse who feels trapped in a hurtful marriage that's not changing. There's the waiting to see about getting into the college you want. And there's the waiting for the test results to determine what the next step of treatment will be. Waiting is a call to live by faith. Lewis Meads puts it this way. He says, waiting is our destiny. As creatures who cannot by themselves bring about what they hope for, we wait in darkness for a flame we cannot light. We wait in fear for a happy ending we cannot write. We wait for a not yet that feels like a not ever. I think that pretty much nails it, doesn't it? We wait for a not yet that feels like a not ever. But again, if we're going to live by faith, we have to get comfortable with that too. With a not yet that feels like a not ever. And I'm quite sure that Abraham felt that way about a lot of things in his life. I'm quite sure that the Jewish Christians that this book of Hebrews was written to, who they waited year after year for God to step in and make their lives easier, but things just kept getting worse. Mark and Janice are feeling the tension as they wait for the house to sell here and something permanent to open up that they can afford in Austin. The elders had to wait 2 years from the time that we felt God was saying, separate the church and the school, launch the school out as its own ministry. We knew what God wanted us to do, but it took 2 years for God to show us how that would come about. Waiting is a hard thing, and while we wait, it's not uncommon for us to struggle with anxiety and anger and resentment and worry and taking matters into our own hands to make something happen. Hear me, God knows when He makes us wait, He knows it's hard, but He also knows it's one of the ways, one of the key ways that He uses to grow our faith. So, we have to get comfortable with change. We have to get comfortable living in tents. We have to get comfortable with waiting. So how? How do you do that? Verse 10. For Abraham was looking not at his present circumstances, but he was looking forward to a city with foundation whose designer and builder is God. The key phrase here is looking forward to. Looking forward to a city with real, lasting, permanent foundations. You see, faith looks forward. Faith waits, and while faith waits, it is looking forward because you're on a journey through this life of change and uncertainty and impermanence and waiting on your way to a future that is secure and certain and eternally permanent. And he picks up on this thought of looking forward again in verse 13 when he says, all these died in faith, though they did not receive the things promised. But they saw them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged, in other words, they accepted the fact that they were tent dwellers, that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who spoke like they spoke make it clear that they're seeking a homeland. And if they had been thinking of the land which they had gone out of, they could have gone back. But as it is, they were thinking forward. They desired a better country, a heavenly one, and therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God because He has prepared a city for them. Let me cut to the chase. The way you and I grow to be more and more comfortable with change and uncertainty and impermanence and waiting is by looking forward to the ultimate fulfillment of God's promise in the world to come, in heaven. In other words, here's the way a Christian thinks. Here's how faith reasons. Faith says what God promises me in my future with Christ, that's what empowers me to live with the difficulties of life in the here and now. What God has promised me in the future, that is what empowers me to live a life of hope, even in the midst of struggle, because this is a growth process. It's something that we're having to learn. But what we have to learn, that what is coming is a better country than what we have here. And because you see, only if you know where you're going ultimately can you live now not knowing where you're going. Only if you know that your future with Christ is permanent and unchanging can you live as a tent dweller, experiencing all the changes of this life now. Only if your faith informs you that the not yet does not mean not ever. There is an ever coming. Not yet does not mean not ever. It just means you have to wait. But if you don't get that, you will not be able to live by faith now. Now, I need to explain something. To my thinking, Abraham fully expected that God would recreate this world into the city of God. He was not thinking of heaven as sweet by and by with clouds and harps and angels. Now, how do I know that? Because he believed God's promise, and God's promise was that God would give him a plot of land that would one day be the place where the nation of Israel would live, and from that place God would rule and reign over all the earth. He believed in that promise, the first promise that was made to him, and he considered him faithful who made the promise. Verse 11. Again, what was the promise? That God would give him descendants and land that would become a nation through which God would bless, meaning God would restore this world to what it was in Eden. In other words, for Abraham, the heavenly city of God was this world made new. That's what he looked forward to. And so, but he believed that because he was God-focused. So when God called Abraham out, Abraham went out not knowing where he was going, but he knew with whom he was going. That was what was important. That's all that mattered. He went out with the God. Think of this. He went out with the God who promised to set the world right again. And if you're going out with the God who is going to make the world new, what else does matter? That's the plan. You're going out every day with the God who's promised to make this world new. What takes precedence over that? And we look forward to this world made new. We look forward to heaven coming down to this earth. Revelation 21, verses 1 and 2. As Jesus taught us to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And we are trusting God to do exactly what Abraham looked forward to, but we see how God is going to do it much more clearly than he did. How is God going to do it? He's going to do it through Jesus. Because you see, Jesus left his Father's house. He was called to go out and leave his Father's house, his home in heaven, to become one of us. And like Abraham, in this life, he had no permanent home. Jesus said, the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He was a homeless man. And he endured the shame and suffering of the cross so our sins could be forgiven. And so one day we could have a permanent home in heaven on earth. And Jesus, he was absolutely stripped of everything for you and for me so that we could become heirs of all that belongs to him in his Father's house. And so Christians learn to think like this. If I'm being called away from my home, if I'm being called away from my family, if I'm being called away from my money, my security, my easy life, if I'm being called away from my health, if I'm being called to wait, if I'm called to do a hard thing, to stay in a difficult marriage, to keep loving a difficult child, if I'm being called to change, the Christian says to himself or herself, it's nothing. It's nothing compared to what Jesus did for me to prepare a place that I would be with him forever. You see, a Christian is someone who says that nothing I'll ever be called to do will come close to what Jesus went through for me. And if we wrap our minds around that, then when God calls you to step out in faith, when you trust him with uncertainty and change and loss, if you are looking forward to what God has promised you in the future, you can and I can, we can become people who are characterized by unbelievable stability, being rock solid, secure and stable and at peace with any change that faith calls us to make. Remember the lesson Mark wanted his children to learn from this hard move to Austin? He said this, it's the same thing God wants us as his children to learn. Mark said, he wants us to see how doing hard things as we rest in and have faith in God is the way God grows his people. Doing hard things, making difficult changes, getting comfortable with changes and waiting and the impermanence of this life, doing hard things as we rest in and have faith in God. That's the way that God grows his people to become like the one whose children we are. Abraham teaches us that. Jesus teaches us that. Holy Spirit, may we learn that. As we go out from this place and we go into a world that is in constant flux, may we keep our eyes on you, who who endured from sinners such hostility against yourself, but for the joy set before you, which that joy being us, you endured the cross. So may we learn to endure the changes we face in our lives with a faith that overcomes.